Welcome to your Route to Wellbeing podcast. I'm Sue Fullergood, and I'm absolutely sure that you deserve to feel great, and it's possible for you to pulse with energy. So if you're not thriving right now, or if there's something that's interrupting your thriving, then maybe this podcast is just what you're looking for. I've tapped into the knowledge base of experts in the 11 domains of well-being. Each of the experts has something that I think is part of the crucial knowledge that you need to be able to really, really take care of yourself. And so listen in and see if you can get that magical piece of information that's going to make the difference for you. Please feel free to share this with your friends and family, whoever you think may benefit from it. Please push the subscribe button so that you can be alerted when future episodes are available. Thank you for listening. Hello, you are listening to your Route to Wellbeing podcast. Please enjoy this podcast and take from it the tools that you need to create the well-being and vital energy that you desire and deserve. I am Sue Fullergood, your host, and I have with me in my studio this afternoon Chris Kenny, who is a master sales coach, a million-dollar business owner, and a sought-after wealth mentor. He teaches undercover superstars how to break their money rules, rapidly accelerate their income, and live with uncommon freedom and choice. When he's not coaching his private clients, you can find him speaking on stages around the world, around sales secrets, living the life of your dreams secrets. He works with talented entrepreneurs so that they can step into their legacy work by shedding the chains of shame and under-earning. Chris is actually going to share with us today some of his incredible insights on relationship matters. And I think that relationship matters are integral to well-being. How can we feel well if we're at loggerheads with those nearest and dearest to us? How can we feel great when we've got conflict that we just feel we can't solve? And how can we feel great when we don't know how to make ourselves heard, understood, and feel seen? And so all that Chris has to share this afternoon is going to really shake up some of our paradigms about relationships and give us some tools and insights and ideas, which I believe are going to empower you to create the well-being in the relationship health domain that you deserve. So listen in and let's hear what Chris has to say today. Welcome, Chris. We're so happy to have you here today. I'm going to dive right in and ask you right now to start by sharing with us your take on relationships.
Well, it's great to be here, first of all. So I want to say hello. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Now, when we get into the topic of relationship, I think the reason that that's near and dear to me is because for the last, it's been 17 years now, I've been coaching primarily women. And it wasn't like something I did intentionally. It wasn't like, hey, I'm going to go market to women. It's just that's who tends to be attracted to my work is I have a primarily female audience. And that's, again, not by any intention. It just, that's what's happened. And what I've seen over and over again is relationship gets kind of interwoven into the work. Because if you have a person that's trying to build a business, build a company, build a coaching company, build a consulting company, build a business, but they're not getting support in the home, it ends up being, it's an uphill battle. It's very, very challenging. So I feel like I've learned a lot in this area for my own relationships. I'd say we're all a work in progress. So I'm not here to say that I am perfect, but I've learned a few things along the way. And I'm a person that came from nothing. I grew up in the hood. My mom was on public assistance. Everything that I have was self-made. I did this on my own, and that's why the company that I run is called Self-Made, and the tagline is everything from nothing. So that's kind of the short version. Yeah, and I'm here for it. So you can ask whatever you wish, and we'll let the conversation be completely organic. We didn't re rehearse any of it, and we'll see where we land, and I'm sure it'll be perfect.
Wonderful. That's what I love. So, Chris, my first question to you is, our relationships are challenging. First of all, our relationship with money is challenging, but then our relationship with people is challenging. And specifically, our intimate relationships are very challenging. Most of us know this, and yet somehow we seem to have been duped by this Cinderella myth, believing if we're women that the handsome prince is going to sweep us off our feet, and believing that we're going to find our perfect Cinderella who fits the perfect shoe if we're a guy. And
Right.
I think that the happy ever after myth has confused people right down deep in their unconscious minds. And I would love to ask you, how do we overcome this myth? And how do we actually delve deep and find within ourselves the ability to do what needs to be done to create the relationships we dream of having?
Well, I think the first thing, and I'll just speak in terms of me and in terms of what I've done. I'm just going to make these I statements. What I did and what I've decided to do is kind of read it. First of all, redefine what I consider the perfect relationship. So, perfection isn't about never having a fight. It's not about that. It's more about what is this person in my space for? You know what I mean? That's kind of how I look at it. What this person is here. The reason that I've created this whole interaction and this whole relationship is because there's something in it for me as a person, for my soul. This is an integral part of my journey. And if it wasn't an integral part of my journey, I wouldn't have created this person right here in front of me. So it's like I look at it as, hey, what is this about? Like, what's the big reason why this person was brought into my space and why I created this relationship? And then it's all about having what I call, I mean, what we've heard this before in the coaching industry, but win or learn mentality. So it's like as things are going on in the relationship, challenges, I think I view challenges as growth opportunities. This is a growth opportunity. What is this? Why has this triggered me at the level that it has, and this thing that's happening with this other person? And I think one of the most important things to understand on this is this statement. I remember when I had a previous coach tell me this, and it's incredibly true. And it's if it triggers me, it's about me. If it triggers me, it's about me. So in relationship, we have to be willing to understand that if something is triggering us, that is something that is being shown to us by another person that we haven't resolved in ourselves. So if for some reason we're in relationship, Sue, and I want to see you more often, for example, I want to see you more, and so you're showing me independence. You're mirroring back to me that you're an independent woman, blah 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 blah, but I am not aligned with my own level of independence, right? If I'm not aligned with that, your independence will trigger me and it'll make me mad, right? So it has to do with understanding that when trigger happens, it's because somebody is mirroring back something that we suppress or deny in ourselves, and that the work is actually on ourselves. So what I tell people to do all the time is it's like you have to look at what is my judgment of this person in this moment. Sue's so damn independent. Okay, where am I suppressing my own independence? And once I come to terms with that part of myself, now your independence is no longer a trigger. I might notice it. I might think it's good. I might think it's bad. I'll observe it, but it doesn't trigger me. That's the difference. So I think we all need to understand that. And attraction, the reason that we get attracted to a person is because of it. It's like an incompletion in the subconscious mind, right? We will create people into our experience that will trigger our wounds. Like you might trigger my abandonment wound that I have, because mom wasn't present when I was a child, right? That's my wound. That has nothing to do with you. And the reason that I've created you into my life and into my experience is to that wound is going to pop up. It's going to show itself. And now, through relationship with you, I have an opportunity to heal that wound. So I think we create these relationships because we're trying to get complete with ourselves. And I want everybody to think about this. There's a lot of people out there you'll look at, and not to make you embarrass Sue, but I might look at Sue and say, wow, Sue's attractive, right? But there's a difference between finding Sue attractive and being attracted to Sue. You see what I mean? The person you're really attracted to is a person that is triggering some sort of incompletion that's in the subconscious mind. And that's why I'm attracted to Sue rather than going, Sue's an attractive woman. Do you see the difference? So it's like, that's what it's about. It's understanding. That's why you've created the experience is to evolve through these things. And you have to be conscious enough to understand that that's what's going on. And be willing to work through these things, or what ends up happening is you're bouncing from relationship to relationship, and the same wounds are going to keep coming up with different people over and over and over and over and over again when the common denominator is ourselves. So it's like I view relationship, I feel this way. I feel that we're wounded in relationship, so we heal through relationship.
Ooh, so there's so many things I'd love to pause out there. And I really start by hearing your beautiful explanation, which I completely concur with, that the purpose of relationships is our own evolution. We
Yes.
attract people into our space to help ourselves become more of the person we were born to be. And then I love how you've said, and I really appreciate that, I would perhaps say it like this: you spot it, you got it. When you have judgment of somebody else, it's revealing a mirror image of something within yourself. So, I basically, all that you've said here, if I had to summarize it, and it makes so much sense, is that you're inviting people to consider that they need to take responsibility for their uncomfortable feelings and know that they belong to them and they're helpful, they're gifts for themselves, rather than being something to blame the other person for and be angry with the other person for. They are something that gives them insight into what to work on for themselves. Sure, so that was a very potent way to begin this conversation. Did I summarize it right, by the way?
Yeah, that's how I completely see it. And I think so many of us, we end because we don't know this and we don't understand it, we can recreate the same issues again and again and again. And this comes down to I firmly believe that couple we all look we all I just want to say we I feel like we all need support because we can't see our crap through the lens of our crap. You know what I mean? We need somebody outside. I still to this day have a relationship mentor that I work with my fiance Julia, and we go and we see this relationship mentor once a quarter, and it's because it keeps the relationship like clear. It keeps it fresh. It keeps it hot. It keeps it sexy. We've been together many years now, so it's like, okay, how do you keep it hot? How do you keep it sexy? How do you stay attracted to each other? How do you not fall into this
Right.
duplicatable rut of, oh, this is what we do, and we do this all the time, and all of that. So I just think we all need help because it's hard to see this when we're in it. It's hard to see it. It's hard to understand it. So, but I completely agree, and I think it's imperative to understand triggers not only for relationship but for business. If a person is a coach, if a person is a consultant running a company, you have you maybe you have a staff, you have employees. And it's understanding why are you like when what are your employees mirroring back to you? You see what I mean? It's the same thing. So it's own your trigger. And I think if we all owned our triggers and took responsibility, like you said, take responsibility for the energy that you're bringing, take responsibility for the thing that's within you that's actually creating the trigger. Stop blaming things outside of ourselves for the trigger. And I think if everybody was doing that, the collective would be in a much better space. There's no question. No
There'd
question.
be more successful relationships and far less unhappy people. And I think, since we're talking about well-being here, that ultimately, if you could take ownership of your triggers and therefore have less outward conflict and more scope for internal work, then you would have more access to well-being. So I think you've given us a big route map on how we can produce more well-being in our relationship domain. So thank you for that.
Correct.
And I also like how you've said that we need somebody from outside of ourselves to be able to shine the light on our blind spots and the areas that we can't personally see. And what you and your fiance have done, by all accounts, is go for help before you've got problems. Go for help while you're still thriving and in love with each other. And that's a new way of thinking, because I think most people think they only should go for help when they're already in trouble, and even then maybe they're afraid or ashamed to go for help. And so you really are inspiring by saying you're going for help long before any problems are really showing up, so that you can.
And it's interesting because what I learned from that, Sue, is you think you don't have any problems, and then you get into that safe environment, and then all of a sudden, all this shit comes up that hasn't been said. And it's like, you see what I mean? It's like we're 4 years in. So many would say, oh, you're 4 years in, still in the honeymoon phase. I promise you, we're not in the honeymoon phase because we have times when we completely butt heads. We have times where our relationship is super hot. We have times where it goes into a rut. We're in all of that. But it was shocking to, like, I remember the first time we went and we sat and we did this exercise that we refer to as keeping the window pane clean. Like when you're standing at a window, she's on one side of the window, I'm on the other side of the window. And what you have to do is you have to keep your side of the window clean. And she has to keep her side of the window clean. And what does that mean? It means say the things that haven't been said. Share the little teeny frustrations. Share the little irritations that are poking at you. What are the things that haven't been said? It could be things about your intimacy. It could be things about your day-to-day interactions together. It could be things around chores around the house. Whatever it is, I think both parties have to have the opportunity to air it out, clean the window pane, have the tough conversations. And when you do that, the eros between the two of you, or between, let me just say between the two of us, that elevates our sexual energy because now we're having the tough conversation. We're able to connect at a deeper level because of the tough conversation, right? And that's why we like having a third person in the room, because if we're having a tough conversation, having a mediator, there is very, very powerful and helpful. But that's what creates the connection. And I think that's like the, it's such a cool thing to understand. That when we have conflict and we effectively navigate conflict and we effectively have these tough conversations, the end result is deeper connection. And but so often we're afraid to dive in. We're afraid what our partner's going to think. We're afraid if it's going to be received. Am I going to be rejected by my partner? What if my partner doesn't like this? What if this makes her angry? What if this hurts her or him, but all of that stuff, if you don't clean the window pane, you're just getting further and further apart, more and more triggers getting created, more and more resentment is happening. The physical part of the relationship, the intimate part, the sex starts to fall off. So like for me, everybody goes through that phase where you get together and all you want to do is be physically intimate. And everybody's has that period of time. And when it starts to phase off, right? That's when you got to clean the window pane. And you know what I mean? And I just think we wait too long so often. And now there's this big rift between the two of you, and there's like 10 years of window pane dirt on this side, and 10 years and 15 years of dirt over here. And now you can't clean the window. You gotta, now you replace the window. You end up in a new, you know what I mean? That's what happens. So I just think we have to stay on top of it. But the once a week we sit and we have like an hour and we go, what's been unsaid this week? Well, it frustrated me when you blank. It frustrated me when you blank. And we talk and we talk and we the, and we can have these conversations because we own our triggers. If I'm triggered, I know it has more to do with me than it does to do with her. So I don't blame her for that, and vice versa. So that ownership mixed with the communication, mixed with listen, and this is just an opinion, mixed with proper masculine feminine dynamic, meaning Julie likes me to lead, right? And I'm not saying all women have to be this way. I'm just saying this is the dynamic that we have in our household, and it works for us. And it's me as man, I'm masculine. Her as woman, she happens to be feminine. I'm not saying that has to be in that order. I'm just saying that's how we are. And because she sees me as a powerful, well-grounded, masculine man, she wants me to lead the household. And I take that role and I take it gracefully. Now, here's the thing. One of the things that I see, and I hear this complaint from women constantly, and it's that they want their man to be more masculine, right? They want more masculine leadership. I hear this a lot, right? I want him to take the ball. I want him to plan. I want him, I want this. But here's the thing. You have to look at what role are you playing in him staying in his feminine? Because what can happen is, you can have a woman that is, let's just say, a control freak, and I can say there's men that are control freaks, but if a woman's constantly trying to control, that is emasculating to a man. So now you're asking him to be more masculine, but the natural way of being is to emasculate. You know what I mean? Not let him lead. You want him to lead, but you want him to do it your way. You see what I mean? So I just think masculine, feminine, we need masculine, feminine polarity in our relationship because it's the polarity that creates the turn on. You see what I'm saying? Is this making sense?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and of course we don't necessarily have to use this in a cisgender,
Yeah.
heteronormative kind of a way. But I agree with you that somebody is the masculine energy at in a domain, and somebody is the feminine
Correct.
in a domain. But you could be the masculine in the financial domain and the feminine in the health and nutrition aspect of the relationship, or the decorating, or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's an energy. It's not a man woman thing. Masculine is an energy. Feminine is an energy. And I think in all of these interactions, we have to have both. You know what I mean? You're gonna have somebody who's leading in that in a situation, and you have somebody that's following. And I just think it's when you're battling each other for which person is gonna be in masculine energy, and you know what I mean? Like that butting heads constantly is an issue. So I don't mean to make it a man, it's not a man woman thing because it's energy. It is masculine energy, feminine energy.
And I think that what you're trying to say, and I really agree with you, is that you can be the follower in one domain of the relationship and the leader in another, and each of us needs to be gracious enough to follow or lead in the area where somebody else is stronger or somebody else has more leadership's capacity.
Right, exactly. Like Julie loves, I mean, some of the feminine stereotypical, stuff. Like she prefers to keep the kitchen. That's her realm. She wants to keep the kitchen. She does the cooking. She does the shopping. She loves that. It helps. She feels good when she's doing that. When it comes to financial decisions, she wants me to do that. So I'm in that realm. And when that needs doing, and we're addressing that, boom, that's where I'm leading, and that's where she's following. So it's like, I just think you just have to agree and understand each other and understand, who's in what lane and who's responsible for what. And once you have that, it helps a great deal.
I agree, and not have a power play going on, But I want to pull out what I heard you say quite a long time ago in the conversation, because we've segued into a new direction. But I really agree with you that one of the things that kills the heat and the physical intimacy side of a relationship is resentment. And I, when I'm coaching couples find that there's so much resentment that's built up layer upon layer upon layer from years and years of not speaking up, of not cleaning the windows. And that's been stored away, almost squirreled away. And it's created this whole sort of deheating effect on the relationship and killed the sex drive in one or other of the partners, or maybe just destroyed the sex life altogether. And so I completely want to highlight what you've said about early and often clearing the windows, speaking up, saying what it is that's bothering you, and trusting that you can, that what you're saying can be received without being terrified that you might destroy the other person or destroy the relationship or destroy something. Actually, it's trust building and not trust breaking. And I just wish that we could drive that message home, because resentment kills your libido. It also kills your well-being. It's the most destructive emotion to be stuck with. Of course, it
Yeah,
can,
and it's,
but you don't want
I
to.
think there's different areas, I just think we have to look inside of ourselves, like where are the areas that I carry shame, around who I am or in, within my way of being. And it's like, I think with Julie, the thing that's been massively different is that I have aired out like a lot of my like deepest, darkest secrets, the things that I thought I would never share with another human being in terms of, who I am and the things that I have shame about, like inside myself. And when you share these things, and then and your partner is able to receive those things, and do so without like massive judgment, that is a very loving experience for me. And it's created very, very deep connection. And it's one of those things, like one of the areas that I've had massive suppression and shame around is who I am as a man, as a sexual being. I think we have to be with someone who can handle quote unquote our crazy, whatever our crazy is. You know what I mean? Because I think we all have quote unquote crazy in certain areas. But I've aired it, and she receives it, and she's like, I don't want you to hide this part of yourself. I want you to be this. And I've been allowed to be who I am as a man and as a sexual being with her. And what that creates is just more intimacy between her and I. Like having the freedom for me, having the freedom to talk openly about fantasy, for example, like what are you fantasizing about, sexually with your partner, and being able to air that out has been one of the most therapeutic things that's ever happened to me, because these are the things we hide. Well, and then we're carrying the shame, and we're affecting our confidence, because we're thinking if people know the truth about us, they're not going to love us. And so we can never write this down, folks. We can never perform at a level that exceeds what we believe about ourselves, right? So when we find a person that can actually handle all of who we are, that's huge for our overall confidence and for our self-esteem. But what most people, I think, do is they have a story that if I tell this person X, he or she won't be able to handle it. So it stays hidden, it stays in the shadow. And then you see what I mean? And now that opportunity to connect over that thing is now lost. You see what I mean? It's like we don't, that's our opportunity for connection. It's those things. And we need to be with people that can actually love us and accept us for the parts of ourselves that we carry shame and judgment on.
And Chris, don't you feel that that has to start with self-acceptance, which sometimes a relationship can help us get to, but if we feel judgment for our own things that we're ashamed about and our own secrets and weaknesses or shameful moments or memories or things that we've done, then we project that judgment that we have of ourselves onto the other person and assume that they're going to judge us. And so I think being able to share, it does enhance your ability to accept yourself. And yeah, what better than to be able to accept yourself, warts and all? because none of us
Yeah.
were perfect. None of us have the capacity or the blueprint to be perfect. So it's just not going to happen. And therefore, we might as well accept ourselves, warts and all.
Completely agree. I mean, I completely agree. And you know, in this relationship, I've had the opportunity to be a stepfather. You know, we have a daughter that's 14, and it's like teaching this to her. You know, teaching projection, teaching triggers, getting her completely conscious of, you know, her stuff, her triggers, and all of this is, to me, it's like it's one of my biggest responsibilities as a stepdad, so that she can love herself more, because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. I think the biggest thing we can learn is how to love ourselves at the end of the day, and our relationships can be a really good tool for that.
We can't easily love someone else more than we can love ourselves. So we're a little
Nope.
bit, if we're stuck despising ourselves or remaining ashamed of ourselves. And so it really does come down to, as you say, seeing yourself as you really are with your triggers and your insecurities and all the other things that you carry, and finding a way to say, okay, I'm going to show up like this.
Yeah, this is who I am. And you know, and again, when you'll be sur I've been consistently surprised when I share stuff like that, because I just think we forget that the other person's in there. I just want to say it, they're in their shit too. So when we share, you know, it's like, ah, oh my gosh, it's like an anvil's coming off our chest, because this thing that we have this story about, you know, we have shame around X, so we think everybody else is going to have shame around X, and we're carrying it, we're carrying it, we're carrying it. It's incredibly exhausting to carry that stuff around, and then keep it hidden. And then because we're keeping all these parts of ourselves hidden, we're not allowing ourselves to experience love at a deep level, a level that's possible. I think we're missing out. Like, if we're at a level five or a level six with our partner, I just think when we start to share, that elevates up to a level, you know, 8, 9, 10, because we can connect over these things that we have shame around. But people don't see that as an opportunity, and sometimes it is. I've seen that's where the greatest connection comes, is when I'm sharing something that I'm horrified to share, or I think, oh, she's not going to be able to handle this, or she's not going to like this about me, or whatever it is. And if you're sharing all this stuff and your partner is just completely misaligned with all this stuff, then maybe you're with the wrong partner. But to not share it, is a prescription for disaster, and it just builds more and more resentment.
And more secrecy. And I always say secrets are toxic, and the things that are hidden catastrophize and ferment and grow bigger and grow frothier and more disgusting in dark recesses of our minds. So to share it is to heal it. But it's kind of counterintuitive, and it takes a lot of courage and fear facing. We've got to actually face the fear that maybe we'll be rejected, which I think is terrifying for all of us. And so maybe we'll be judged, maybe we'll be found wanting, and maybe we'll be rejected. And therefore we do what I call fear avoidance behavior. And so we keep on avoiding sharing. And so the person only knows a half-baked version of us, only the light stuff and none of the dark stuff.
Yeah, like, and for me, like, let me just share something. And this is on the vulnerable side. And this is a story I have about my dad. Do I know that this is true? I don't know that it's true, because my dad has passed away. But my story, my father passed away back in 2016, and he died of a drug related. It was a drug related death. He put heroin into his body. The heroin had fentanyl in it, and it killed my father. All right. It wasn't an overdose. It was a typical dose of heroin, as one would say. I don't know what that is, because I've never done that, nor am I interested. But he died because of that. Right. Now, here's the thing, and we can dive into this at whatever level you want to. It's completely up to you. 2 weeks later, we had my father's funeral, and we all gave speeches about my dad. And my dad was a hairdresser for, you know, the bulk of his life, so he knew a lot of people. So we had this big, you know, thing, a celebration of life. I spoke, my brother spoke, so on and so forth. My sister spoke. 2 weeks later, my sister died. So my sister had died of an accidental cocaine overdose. So, that happened in 2016. And the reason that I share that, especially with regard to my father, is my father was a bisexual man, but I don't believe that people knew that about him. The only reason that I knew is because my mom told me, but I don't think my dad ever knew that my mom knew. He thought it was this big secret. So he's got this, here's this thing, I'm a bisexual man. I'm going to carry all this shame about being a bisexual man and about all my desires around men or that I have for men. And because I can't live with that inside myself, I'm going to drug. Right? I'm going to drink over, I'm going to overindulge on the booze, and and then he started, smoking marijuana, and then it just evolved into all of this stuff. And he ended up being a person that got addicted to heroin, and it killed him. So I just feel like these areas of suppression, I wish for him and I wish for all people that we felt free enough and safe enough to share these parts of ourselves, because the way that we handle it when we can't handle parts of ourselves is we develop all these behaviors that we use to numb out. We could be numbing out on our devices. We could be numbing out through gambling. We could numb out through an unhealthy relationship with sex, pornography, you name it. There's all these different ways that people numb out, and that creates more and more disconnection. We're getting more and more disconnected. And when I look at my dad and when I look at his death and I look at what's here for it, why did this get it created where I lost my dad and I lost my sister 2 weeks later? I feel like they died of a disease of disconnection. That's what killed them. Disconnection. Disconnection to self. And because they were disconnected to self and they had so much shame around their own ways of being and their own who they were, that they were drugging and now they're dead. And that's like, to me, that's so important to understand, because if my dad had ever came to me, with all of this, I would have loved him and I would have accepted it for him. And I would venture to say that the women in his life may or may not have accepted him, but because he was hiding at that level, he was numbing out, and it ended up being the thing that killed him.
Yo, and I'm so sorry for those excruciating losses of from your family and for their suffering. You raise such an important point, is that when we are ashamed and we're hiding ourselves, it causes us pain that ultimately can be deadly to us, in whatever form, but largely from the disconnection it causes. I think it's so important to recognize that it's our inner protector, I call it our ego, that makes us want to hide away parts of
Yes.
and keep them in the dark and keep them hidden. And actually, that protector that's supposed to keep us safe often is the thing that causes our own demise and destruction. And so I think it's really what you're saying is that it's all about your relationship with yourself. And I think if we can bring our ego part, the protective part, up for ourselves and actually have conversations with it and actually invest
Yes.
in it, is actually serving us the way it's trying to, we have a chance against this downward spiral that's so possible for human beings.
I think the first thing, in this area, first of all, I couldn't agree with you more. The first thing to understand is that we are not our inner voice. We are the observer of our inner voice. You are not your inner voice. You are the observer of your inner voice. And the reason that I say that is, fundamentally, here's what happens. Ego, what ego is ego is your current sense of self, right? That's what ego is. This is my current sense of self. So here's what happens. If current sense of self, let's just put this in the area of money or finances. Let's say your current sense of self is accustomed to bringing in $100,000, right? That's your current sense of self. Anything that threatens that part of yourself, your ego will resist, because the ego just wants to survive, right? So that's one of the reasons why people resist transformation, is because transformation basically can mean the death of your current sense of self, right? So the ego is going to resist that. Now, when these parts of ourself are created, so this ego exists, What ends up happening is the ego creates a series of what we call identities, right? And the identities protect the ego. So again, if your ego says, "Hey, my belief about myself is I make $100,000," you'll have a series of identities that protect that you make 100,000. One identity might be a scarcity identity, right? So staying in scarcity around all your financial decisions and not allowing yourself to hire help or support, or you see what I mean? You have a scarcity identity. That identity is in place to protect your current sense of self. You might also have a procrastinating identity. So you'd procrastinate because if you take too much action, heaven forbid, you might start making 200,000. They have a procrastination identity. You have an identity that thinks you're not enough. So, okay, I'm not enough. I'm not worth 200,000. So that identity is also protecting the current sense of self. So the work is to become aware of what identity am I bringing to the table in these different situations? What is the impact of this identity? Right? What does this identity believe? Right? And I want everybody to understand this. Everything exists in duality, which means if you have a part of yourself, and let me just say this, I'd rather have you say, instead of saying, "I am insecure," what I'd rather have you say is, "I have an identity that thinks I'm insecure." Because that's what it is. It's not your higher self. You have an identity that thinks you're insecure. But because everything exists in duality, if you have an identity that's insecure, guess what you also have? You have an identity that's really secure. Right? You can't have one without the other. So what you have to become conscious of is in these different situations, what identity is coming to the table? Right? And what's the impact of that identity? Right? That's the consciousness, right? And it's not necessarily easy to do. And I always tell people this. Let me just say this first. When we say everything exists in duality, I think some people might have a hard time realizing what that actually is. So I want to explain it. The universal law around this is what's called the law of polarity. So I want everybody to write that down. Law of polarity. What does law of polarity say? Law of polarity says everything in the universe has an opposite and it exists at the same time. Everything in the universe has an opposite and it exists at the same time. You can't have left without also having right. Because nothing is left without having right to compare it to, right? You can't have up without also having down, because nothing is up without down to compare it to. You can't have in without out. You can't have hot without cold, right? You can't have good without bad, okay? Now, here's the thing with that. What that also means is if everything in the universe has an opposite and it exists at the same time, if you have problem, what do you also have?
Vision.
You have solution. Every problem in the universe brings with it the solution. It has to, because you can't have one without the other. So the mentality is what I want people to think about business, about money, finance, relationship, all those things is if problem's present, so is solution. It's not, is it present? It's where is it? It is here. It has to be. So if you pr approach all of the quote unquote problems with a knowing that the solution is present, that changes your way of being. It shifts your beingness. Like if you say to me, "Chris, I want to learn how to make seven figures," if that desire is present, then the way to achieve it has to be present as well. It's not, is it possible? Maybe it's possible. Not sure if it's possible. If you're thinking about it and you present that out into the universe, the solution has to be here. It's present. So again, we're getting identities are the same. You have an identity that lacks confidence, that means you have identities that are incredibly confident. If you have a scarcity identity, then you have an identity that would invest and invest openly and freely. But know what your identities are, know which ones are running the show so that you can have the consciousness to make a different decision in certain situations. So what I do and what I teach is I ask people to name their identities and have fun with it. Poly procrastinator. You know what I mean? Like name it. Name it. Name it something funny. Because until you give those identities a voice, then they're going to run you. You know what I mean? Like run it. I would say, yeah, let Polly the procrastinator tell you everything that Polly the procrastinator believes. Air it out, journal it out. But if you have Polly the procrastinator, then you also have, Douglas get it done over here, who just gets all the shit done all the time. What does that identity believe? Journal that all out. And then when you find yourself procrastinating, you can go, oh, this, my procrastination identity is running me right now. I'm going to step into this instead. You see what I mean? That level of consciousness is super, 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 super important. And I'm going to say one more thing on this. I firmly believe that whatever we have expanded identities that are on the expanded side, and we have identities that are on the limited side. And I will say this, the extent to which we allow ourselves to feel limitation is the same extent that we'll allow ourselves to feel expansion. So if you have this identity that is scarce, right, but you're constantly trying to go, don't feel that, don't feel scarce, and you're only allowing yourself to feel scarce at a level three, well, guess what? You're only going to allow yourself to feel expansion and abundance at a level three. So what I want people to do is to be very deliberate about allowing themselves to feel what they need to feel regarding a particular identity. Like totally like worst case scenario, scarcity identity. I'm going to run out of money. I'm going to go broke. I'm going to live in a cardboard box. Like give that identity full voice. Very intentionally during particular time of the day. You know what? 2 o'clock today, I'm going to let this identity just go nuts, and I'm going to pull out my journal and paper, and I'm going to journal out all the worst case scenarios on scarcity. Right? Air it out. Get that energy clean. Air it out. Get rid of it. Move it. Move it. Move it. Move it. I don't want to say get rid of it. I want to say express it. Express it. Express it. Right? Once it loses its charge, now you can set some intentions around what it is that you really want to create on the side of abundance, right? And then, boom, you set the intentions, and then you ask the identity that's abundant what it thinks about that. And it'll give that a voice. You see what I mean? You want to air this stuff out. So you air it out, air it out, air it out. And as you're airing it out, what you find is the charge goes away, the trigger. I think it all comes down to we don't want to feel something. So I'm saying instead of trying not to be scarce, I'm saying allow yourself to feel scarcity at an incredibly high level, but be deliberate about it. 2 o'clock today, I'm doing a journal. I'm going to write this stuff. I'm going to give this part of myself the stage and just let it go, let it air out. This way, it's not running you all the time. It's got a voice, and now you can shift, go to the identity that's on the abundant side. Get that identity expressing itself, set some powerful intentions, and move on. So there you have it. Hop off the soapbox here for a minute.
No, well, I like what you've said. So you bring it into the light, and we've sort of segued off from relationships here into the realm of finance, but
Yep.
obviously, it's the same thing. If you can bring into the light the things that you feel are shrinking you down and are making you feel small, and you can really give them voice and stop hiding them away, but shine the brightest light you can find on them, express them, give them voice, then you also have access to their opposite. And I've just written a book a little while ago called The Sweet Spot, and I'm absolutely a proponent of the idea that everything is on a continuum. So the two opposites exist and everything in between. So you can move between those two extremes. So many of the listeners may have read that book, and therefore they'll be familiar with that concept. But I love how you say when you really give voice to this, you also make available the opposite. So I'd love for you to share with us the story from your own life that's given you the most insight into relationship health and success. Maybe it's to do with your fiance now, but maybe it came from way back when and gave you some kind of super insight, superpower.
Well, I think the best book that I ever read in this area, and I want to just go to Harville Hendrix. There's a book written called Getting the Love You Want. And I think that was the most profound book that I've ever read about relationship. And Harville talks about this idea of And I want to just say read the book because I might not explain. I'm not going to explain it anywhere near as good as he does. But what I still remember from this book is this thing about what he calls isolator and fuser. So an isolator, an isolator is very independent. Goes out, prefers, likes its downtime, quiet time, likes to be with themselves. And then there's what's called a fuser. And the fuser is a lot more, I want to use the term needy, or that's probably not the right place to put it, but there tends to be in the relationships, there tends to be a person that's a little bit more isolator-ish, and there's somebody that's a little bit more fuser-ish. So it's understanding what's an isolator, what's a fuser, who's typically, in there in terms of who's doing what, who's isolating more often, who's a fuser more often. If you want to know which person is the fuser, he says, which person wants to make up quicker after there's an argument. That's usually the fuser. All right. Neither one is good or bad. That's the point. It's not good, the isolator is the good person, the fuser is the bad. It's not. It's like there's just this dynamic that's typically taking place. And then even more so inside this book, he talks a little bit about this thing around the unconscious connection and how we talked about that earlier. It's like there's these unconscious completion or incompletions that are going on. There's these areas where we've had wound, and we will be attracted to people that can actually trigger the wound, and then we can heal through that relationship. So I think that was the best book that I've ever read, and that was one of the most important things that I learned. And then in addition, important, really, really important learning, and I'm going to direct everybody to another book. The book is called The Dark Side of the Light Chasers,
Maybe
and that
for
was written by Debbie Ford. Debbie Ford was a total pioneer in teaching shadow. You know what I mean? She talked about shadow. So mask and shadow. Mask is the persona we show to the world. Shadow are the parts of us ourselves that we suppress or deny. And then when somebody's mirroring back one of these parts that we're suppressing or denying, that's why we get triggered. So, reading these two readings were books that were really pivotal in my life. And I think the understanding that came out of those two books was really profound for me, in the area of relationship, in the area of business, because, hey, shadow self comes into play when we're in business as well, business relationships, all of that. So I think, yeah, I think understanding mask and shadow was really paramount. And then understanding this area of unconscious connection. With that Harville Hendrix teaches, those were really pivotal for me.
I'll put both those references in the chat afterwards, because in the no, podcast notes, because I agree they're brilliant books. And Imago Therapy, which is the therapy,
Yes, Imago, that's Harville's, yeah.
Harville Hendrix's work is very much central to what I do. So we're both talking the same language, I'm happy to hear.
Great.
Chris, I'd love to ask you, intimacy. Have you got any golden nuggets and tips for people that we haven't already covered, to how to build intimacy? And I'm not just talking about physical intimacy, but emotional intimacy, real deep, ability to connect and be naked, in other words, without defenses with one another. Any nuggets for us?
Oh man. Well, first of all, you have to be really courageous. So just understand it's scary. But it does come back to what I said earlier. I think it's being willing. I would just say an area of entry. This is the area that I entered in terms of intimacy, because this is where I had a lot of shame. It was starting to share fantasy with your partner. I don't think we've talked about that extensively, but sharing with your partner things that you fantasize about is a good area, to kind of open up. Intimacy, what does it mean? It means into me see, into me see, look into me, like let people see who you are. But yeah, the window pane exercise where we once a week we share on what's going unsaid currently. I'm trying to think of other things. And it's funny because when you say it, the first place my head goes, and maybe this is because I'm a man, I go right to physical intimacy. But I think it is. I don't want to be cliche and say you have to communicate. But when I say you have to communicate, it means you have to be willing to share and have tough conversations about, what you're disappointed about and what you're upset about, and the littlest things, because that's where the resentment starts. So that weekly check-in with your partner, what's currently been unsaid is very, very, very powerful. And I don't undervalue that. And then as a man, for me, I always find it very interesting, Sue, that we're willing oftentimes to invest in our businesses, right? There's business coaches. I consider myself a business coach. So I've been doing this 17 years. People have been willing to pay me money to mentor them on business building. But the frequency, now that happens a lot. People will invest in that. But when it comes to our freaking relationship, when it comes to our intimacy, when it comes to our sex, because we have so much shame about it, we don't go hire mentorship. Like, why are we not having mentorship on our intimacy and mentorship on how to become more intimate with our partners? Mentorship as a man, learning as a man how to please your woman better. Why are we not studying this? You see what I mean? And it's because of shame. Because in this culture, and I would say, I know it's true in American culture, there's so much shame attached to it. If I said to most people, guess what? Once a quarter, I go up to New York City, and I meet with a mentor that helps us with our intimacy, our connection, our communication, and our sex. People go, ooh, you know what I mean? They're afraid to actually go there. But I would just say, invest in this area in your life. We all deserve to have intimacy, to have deep connection, and we all deserve to have great, 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 amazing sex. And I feel like, but we're afraid to invest in it. And I just wish people would invest in it, because there's help out there, for all of us.
We need pleasure
Yeah.
and in order to thrive. And I couldn't agree with you more. Actually, the most important decision you ever make is who you choose to spend your life with. And I say that to somebody who's been divorced, and I've seen the absolute havoc that getting divorced wreaked in my life and my children. Luckily, we did come out the other side, but at the time it was devastating. And yeah, why not invest in that? And maybe long before you invest in your business, because when that's secure and your health, your relationship health is flourishing, your sexual health is flourishing, then you are coming as a whole being to meet your business, and you can be much more successful there. So maybe that's the place we should start.
Completely true. It's like, there's so much out there that's available. It hurts my heart when I hear from women, because again, I'm pr talking primarily to women, and we have these conversations about relationship, and they talk that they either have trouble having an orgasm, or their sex life is completely done, or they're in sexless marriages, or I mean, the list goes on and on and on. It's like, gosh, invest. You know what I mean? There's help for that. There's help for that. If you're massively self-conscious, as a woman, for whatever reason, and there's a level of self-consciousness that's coming up for you, and that you're having trouble like getting back into your body, get some help, work on it. Everybody deserves to have pleasure, and that opens a whole other, Pandora's box. But I just what the main thing that I want to say is, don't be embarrassed to invest in this area of our lives. And the reason we don't is because of shame
Yeah, and fear.
and fear. Yeah, it's an unknown area.
So I've got one last big question I'd love to pose to you. When money walks out and financial problems walk in, often love goes out the door. How can we work better with money in our relationships, so that financial pressure and stress is not a destructive force in our relationships, specifically our intimate relationships?
Yeah, I think it's all of these areas. I think if we have resentment and disconnection that's built up in all of these other areas, and then you throw money on top of it, money's incredibly emotional, and it can be the straw that breaks the camel's back. So again, I think it's open communication. I think it's being willing to say to your partner the really difficult things. Now, if Julie feels that I'm not holding up my end of the bargain when it comes to finances, she's going to tell me. You see what I mean? Like we have that dialogue. She doesn't like sit there and suppress it. You know what I mean? I just think we have to be willing to talk about these things. We have to be willing to communicate. And when we're strong outside of the money, and then there's financial trouble that comes in, we're able to bear it. You see what I mean? So I think it has to do with keeping the window pane clean that we talked about earlier. Consistently being in the habit of having the tough conversations when this happens in the area of money, all of these other things, that foundation that you've built through the communication and having the tough conversations carries you through the tough times. If you haven't been having any of those conversations and then you throw out money, it'll be the gas on the fire, and now you've got a big issue and you've got a big problem. I also think, for us, because we work together as well, I just want to say this, like having our lane for any couples that might be listening to this and you're in business together, the biggest thing that we've learned, and yes, this ties into the money, it's having each other. I know what my lane is in the business. Julie knows what her lane is and what her lanes are in the business. She stays in her lane, I stay in my lane. We're not intertwining all the lanes all the time. I'm responsible for sales. I'm responsible for delivery. So if there's any issue with selling in our company and there's any issues with delivery and customer service, that is my lane. When it comes to the marketing and that the marketing, the funnels, the all of that kind of stuff, that's her lane, right? Stay in your lane. If when I go over into her lane, it gets mucky. When she comes over into my lane, it gets really, really mucky. And that's where rift can start to really, really, really come in. So I hate to again be cliche and say you have to talk about these areas. And I think money ends up being the straw that breaks the camel's back when people already aren't communicating about all the other stuff.
And Chris, do you think that one person, obviously this is different from different relationships and it will be different, but in my worldview or relationship view, it's not okay to totally defer responsibility for all the money onto one person. I think because we all need money and because money is such an emotional and difficult subject for so many of us. Each one has to take some responsibility for the money side of the relationship, even as you say, it's just to communicate and to investigate what the other person is doing. I think you can't just defer it and say, okay, you look after it. I'm avoiding it and give yourself permission to do that. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with it because we're here as a team, we're here as a unit. We're here. That's my perspective. And again, it depends who you ask. I mean, there's probably people out there that have households that run that way where one person's in charge of it. That's not how we run it here.
And if it works for you, then great. But if it's not,
Then go ahead and do it. Yeah, if it works, then stick with it. But we're in consistent communication about it. We have two different divisions inside of our company. We have the coaching division, which is we're teaching high ticket sales, and we run a podcast on that subject some other time, but we're teaching high ticket sales over here. And then we've got another division where we do conversion copy. So we write copywriting funnels for coaches, consultants, and service providers. So we've got the copywriting side that can generate revenue. We've got the coaching side that generates revenue. She tends to run more of the copywriting side. I tend to run more of the coaching side. But again, we're in our lanes, but we're talking about the finances because the way that we're set up is we have the self-made company, which is treated as an LLC, but it's owned by our two other coaching companies. You see what I mean? So Chris Kenny Coaching and Copy Crimes LLC, you see what I mean? It owns the self-made company. So it's all coming together. We're consistently interacting about both. And sometimes we'll go, hey, this is where we're at with the coaching. Why don't we put some additional focus into the copywriting side and generate some finance over there? Because we haven't run a launch, for copywriting in a while, and we'll swap over there. But she doesn't go, Chris, it's your responsibility to bring in the money. I don't say to her, Julie, it's your responsibility to be bringing in money. But we're never yelling at each other, going, you're not bringing in enough, and blah, 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 blah. But we're consistently having the hard conversation, and that's why.
Well, I mean, I do think it's testament to your relationship if you can live together, work together, dream together, and build a life together. So, yeah, that's a lot. And I think that you have shared so much that's really, really valuable here. I think if I had to summarize what you've said, it does boil down to three important things. One is take responsibility for your triggers and don't blame somebody else. Number two is own your shame and share it bravely. And number three is communicate, communicate, communicate. Have those hard conversations, however scary they are. Did I leave something out, or have I kind of
No, that's, you know, if you, and it's funny because I, you know, we wanted, you and I both wanted this conversation to be completely organic, but I just think it sounds so simple when we say take responsibility, but it's not that simple. So I want everybody to say, we know it's easier said than done, but just look at it. I totally agree with it. But I mean, if I had to put it down to one thing, I'd say take responsibility for your shit and stop blaming your partner for it and vice versa. You know, whatever you're judging in your partner is what you haven't come to terms with inside yourself. And if we understand that and we focus on coming to terms with these parts of ourselves, then we will have deeper connection, deeper intimacy, deeper self-love, bigger self-esteem. And then when we're loving ourselves, we are in a much better position to love each other.
Yep, and it all boils down to loving ourselves first
Loving
and
ourselves.
love each other. Yeah. Wow, we've made it sound very simple. It is not simple. It is a work in progress, and I think that's what I'd love to really leave our listeners with, is that both of us are saying loud and clear, relationships are hard and they take hard work. And they are our route to evolution and our route to personal growth and our route to being the very best version of ourselves in the world, even when they're filled with strife. And so be grateful for your relationship, engage with it fully, and don't shy away from the hard stuff if you can help it. Be brave because it'll be worth it. And so, yeah, Chris Kenny, you are a minefield of information, and I'd love to have you back to talk about building a seven figure or whatever number it is for you businesses. As I said, I've already learned a lot from you, and I've learned such a lot this afternoon. So really, really thank you for your time and your generosity and for your presence. If people want to get hold of you, how do they get hold of you?
The best place is inside of our Facebook group. You know, I'm just going to direct people there. The reason I'm directing people to the Facebook group is because we do teaching in there, complimentary teaching every Thursday. Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, we're doing live complimentary teaching. The name of the group is High Ticket Income Accelerator on Facebook. High Ticket Income Accelerator on Facebook. There'll be a couple of questions you have to answer to enter the group. And if y'all want me to know that you came from the podcast, just write Sue's name, you know, in one of those questions. Just say, I heard you on, you know, Sue Fuller Good's podcast, and I'll know that's where you came from. And that's where you can get more access to teaching. We do teach on this area inside of the group. We also teach on high ticket sales. We teach on mindset. We teach on money mindset. We teach on business model. There's a whole bunch of stuff, but there's a lot of complimentary content inside of the group. So we'd love to see everybody there.
There is. You're incredibly generous, and you've been incredibly generous today. Thank you, Chris, and thank you to everybody who's listened. Please remember to share this with your friends who you think it could benefit, and make your comments at the end of the podcast, and don't forget to like it too, so other people can have access to it if it should be useful to them. Thank you, thank you, thank you, and have a wonderful evening. Bye for now. Please push the subscribe button so that you can be alerted when future episodes are available. Thank you for listening.